You know that Bible in the hotel nightstand? You pick it up and you just assume it's, well, the Bible.
Right.
A single book locked in stone for 2,000 years.
Which is probably the biggest misconception out there. The Bible isn't really a book. It's more like a library.
A library, okay.
And that library's been renovated and censored and even expanded depending on where and when you are.
And that's exactly what we're digging into today. Christian texts, canon and non-canon. We're looking at this architectural fluidity of Scripture.
From ancient Ethiopia all the way to modern America.
Yeah. And it turns out the line between Holy Scripture and, I don't know, interesting fan fiction is way blurrier than you'd think.
It really is.
So let's start with what I'm calling the maybe pile. I was looking at the difference between a Catholic Old Testament and a Protestant one, and it's almost like a director's cut versus the theatrical release.
That is a perfect analogy. The early Christians, they were all using the Septuagint, the Greek director's cut.
Which had extra books.
A whole bunch of them, the Deuterocanon. But later, Protestants wanted to get back to the theatrical release, you know, the original Hebrew texts. So they left those extra scenes on the cutting room floor.
And they cut some incredible stories. I mean, the Book of Judith, where a widow just beheads an enemy general.
And Bell and the Dragon.
Oh, right. Which is basically a Sherlock Holmes mystery tacked onto the end of Daniel.
It really is. But if you want a true time capsule, you have to look at the Ethiopian Orthodox Tewahedo Church.
Because they were so isolated.
Exactly. Okay. Geographically cut off.
Yeah.
So they held onto texts that the West completely lost for, like a millennium.
Like the Book of Enoch. I mean, that thing reads like sci-fi. Fallen angels, giants.
Nephilim, yeah. But it wasn't some fringe text back then. The New Testament Book of Jude actually quotes Enoch directly.
No way.
Yep. It was a core text for a lot of early believers. And the Ethiopian canon also has three Maccabees.
Which is confusing because it has nothing to do with the famous Maccabees.
Nothing at all. It's a prequel, sort of. But it does have a stampede of 500 intoxicated elephants.
Which is, you know, arguably more memorable.
It's certainly a story of miraculous deliverance, yes. Okay, so let's move to the rejected pile. These aren't just extras. These are the ones the early church actively tried to erase.
The Gnostics. And we really only know about this because a peasant found the Nag Hammadi library in a jar in 1945.
Right. So the Gnostics were all about Gnosis, secret knowledge. They believed the physical world was a trap, a mistake.
So their stories just turn everything upside down.
Completely. Take the Gospel of Judas. In that version, Judas isn't a traitor.
He's the hero.
He's the hero. He's helping Jesus escape his physical body, which is the whole point.
And then there's the infancy Gospel of Thomas, which shows Jesus as a kid.
But not the gentle kid from the nativity plays.
No. He's this powerful and honestly kind of a brat. He withers another kid's hand just for spilling water.
Mm.
It's jarring.
And that's exactly why they were cut. They failed the test of orthodoxy. They just didn't match the accepted teaching.
But this hunt for secret or lost texts didn't just die out.
Not at all. It exploded again in 19th century America. This is the new pile. The Restorationist movement.
Joseph Smith. The idea that the original gospel was lost and had to be, well, restored.
So he publishes the Book of Mormon, but the really fascinating one, I think, is the Book of Abraham.
This is the one tied to Egypt, right?
Yeah.
He bought some papyri from a traveling mummy exhibition.
He did, and claimed to translate them into a lost record written by Abraham himself.
Okay.
But then in the 1960s, fragments of those same papyri were rediscovered, and Egyptologists looked at them and said,
"Let me guess, not the Book of Abraham."
Not even close. It's a standard Egyptian funerary text. Specifically, something called the Breathing Permit of Hor.
Wait, a funeral permit gets translated as the personal writings of Abraham? That's a huge gap.
It is. The modern church's explanation is complex. You know, some see it as a catalyst for revelation, not a literal translation. But you see similar choices in the Jehovah's Witnesses' New World Translation. Well, they replace the word cross with torture stake. And they insert the name Jehovah into the New Testament 237 times.
Even though it's not in the original Greek manuscripts?
It's not there at all. It's a clear theological choice that defines their beliefs.
So, okay. We have drunk elephants in Ethiopia. We have secret passwords in Gnostic Egypt. And we have funeral scrolls in America.
And what it proves is that the line between inspired scripture and just, you know, instructive literature, It isn't about the text alone. It's determined by geography, by church authority, by history.
It just completely forces you to rethink the whole idea of a single standard Bible.
It does. The Christian Bible is a fluid, living library. And that raises a really provocative question, I think.
Well, it's not.
If the canon is a choice made by people, what does that say about the definition of the faith itself?
No. Okay. It's not just divine inspiration. It's human selection. We'll leave you all to chew on that one. Thanks for tuning in.